And back now, I've got the dynamic duo of Dan Anfield and Nick Goldberg. they're laughing because I always get the name wrong, and I've corrected it and put it right in here, and someone's crossed it out and changed it. Anyway, that was very naughty. That's a very naughty thing to do. Anyway, we're going to be talking about one of the subjects that you've already gone through some months back, way back in January. But what aspect is that? Who's going to take this one?
Well, thank you, Scott. I hope you're well, by the way.
Yeah, I was fine. Until you changed everything.
It was me who changed it, yeah, just for the yes, comic yes. relief. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
we're just going to remind you what exactly a will can dispose of and what it doesn't dispose of, and what to do if you're looking at specific legacies within a will to make sure those legacies don't fail.
Right, okay. And can you give us a little bit about that? What exactly are you going to be talking about on that?
Yeah, okay. Well, look, a will that you write or you get drafted for, you can dispose of your property, your sole property. So, right. For example, your interest in a home, like a defined share in a home, or if you own a property outright, your shares that you might have just in your name, any ISAs, any bonds that you might have just in your name. Any jewellery that you own, your car perhaps that you own at the date of your death. Dan, you want to chip in? Anything else I'm sort of missing here, like vehicles or...
No, I think you've been pretty comprehensive.
But you've got to be a bit careful, haven't you, with some of the things that you might bequeath. You mentioned a car. Now, I seem to recall that you mentioned last time that you can't just say, my car. You've got to be a bit more specific.
Well, it all depends if you change your car, so or if you know how specific the wording in the will is. So, for example, if your will says my Mercedes car will pass to my grandson, now in effect you might be thinking whatever car I've got will pass to my grandson on my death, but if you specifically said Mercedes car, and that car has been sold and traded in for example, a Ford, then that gift will fail because the Mercedes car doesn't exist and it's gone, and you might have still thought, well, hold it, I'm going to give the new Ford car to my grandson, but because that's not the Mercedes car that you indicated in the will, it's not going to pass to that grandson. That's why you need to take the right advice to make sure that we word it correctly, because it's taken at the date of
signing the will.
Of signing the will.
So, but you might have another Mercedes car a bit later on, but it wasn't the one that...
Absolutely. So, the one that was mentioned in the will, because as Dan just said, it was the one, you know, it's taken from the date that you've signed the will, then that gift would fail as well, even if you'd kept a Mercedes car as you had in the first place.
So you've got to be very specific. There.
Very specific, and it may be that you're just saying, look, any car that I own at the date of my death will pass to my grandson on my death. But again, I think that the important thing with a will is you need to have the right advice, so because, of course, this is something we do all the time, as opposed to something that's done once in a lifetime, as a lot of people do it, if they're doing their own will, yeah?
Right, but actually you need to regularly update your will, do you not, as your circumstances change, as they will.
Yeah, okay, I'm going to pass this one to Dan, because Dan's done a recent letter to someone about this, haven't you, Dan?
What about regularly updating?
Yeah, about regularly updating the will, yeah.
Well, I prefer to use the term review.
Right.
You should regularly review your will to make sure it's still fit for purpose, to make sure it still reflects your current circumstances and, of course, current legislation. Because changes in legislation, as well as changes in your circumstances, can have an effect on the way your will takes effect. So it's very, very important to review it regularly. Regularly could mean 3 years or 5 years. Mm. And reviewing it doesn't necessarily mean that you need to change it. But it just gives you the peace of mind in that situation, knowing that it still will work the way that you want it to.
Now, you mentioned, you've alluded there to changes in the law, But for most aspects, that wouldn't alter things, would it? Or would it?
Well, it depends which areas of law change. Some of the areas of law that do change from time to time are those relating to inheritance tax, for instance. Mm. There was a major change to the way that estates were taxed back in October 2007, but that affected mostly married couples. It was actually good legislation for a change.
Right.
Favoured married couples. And, of course, you get changes in legislation such as the Care Act, of course, which we touched on in a recent programme. And you get changes in... What are the sort of legislation? Things like the Mental Capacity
Powers
Act.
Powers of Attorney, yeah.
Powers of Attorney, which, yeah. Which whilst that particular legislation doesn't affect your will, it is still nonetheless an important element of your estate planning generally.
Yeah, yeah. And that's something you really need to keep your finger on the pulse of, yeah?
Yeah, but it's difficult as a layperson, isn't it, to keep your finger on the pulse because, with the greatest respect, most people who make a will think that that's that job
sure,
tucked away and, and never again shall I need to look at it. But we've learned, a lot of people have learned to their cost, that that's not necessarily the case, hence the need to regularly review.
What sort of things would you suggest would be the trigger points that you would that would be the ones that would say to you, now I need to reevaluate my will?
Well, I think on a personal level, you should be considering reviewing if you have a major change in your financial circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
That could be winning some money, inheriting some money, paying off a mortgage perhaps, or some sort of bond maturing.
It could be retirement.
It could be your retirement, of course, major change in one's life, or it could be a change in family circumstances. That could be your divorce or your separation. It could be a divorce or separation of one of your children. It could be the death of someone in the family that maybe is appointed in your will in some way as an executor perhaps, or is benefiting in some way in your will. So any number of things that can happen in your life that make you think, I wonder if that affects what my will is intended to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it could be, of course, that you might find out that one of your children's got financial difficulties. Maybe you realise there's a strained relationship between the children and one of their partners. Mm. Maybe you've got a strained relationship with your partner, or you've met someone
that's
new.
Normal, and, isn't it?
that's called marriage, yes. Scott. Yeah. But that's a good reason to do a will. Absolutely.
All right, okay. Well, you've given us a lot to think about there, and we'll come back to that in just a moment. Now, just a reminder that I should have mentioned at the beginning of the programme that obviously this is quite an involved subject, and we can only really gloss over the main details. So if there is anything that you want to talk about, the best thing to do is give the guys at Affinity a call. They'll be pleased to come and talk to you in your own home, so you don't even have to go anywhere yourself. And the number to call is 01245 850000. Don't worry, if you miss that number, we'll give it to you again in a minute. Right now, we were talking about, or a few moments ago, we were talking about what you can give away in your will, but now we're going to have to take a look at some of the things that you can't dispose of. So who's going to take a flyer on that one?
Well, I'll start that one off.
You're going again, Nick.
Yeah, I'll go. one of the biggest things that you can't transfer via your will is jointly owned property. So I'm going to cover the jointly owned property part, and I'm going to pass it over to Dan. So, for example, jointly owned property, well, that covers jointly owned bank accounts, jointly owned bonds, investment products, and of course, jointly owned homes. Yeah?
Right.
Because they passed outside of the will. Jointly owned property, whatever it may be, passes to the survivor.
Right.
So for example, let's suggest that myself and Dan Atwood, or in Atfield, are married. and of course, yes. a lovely couple we make.
Yeah, so absolutely.
So myself and Dan now have a joint bank account between us, and yeah. we've got ISAs, our own individual accounts, but we've also got a jointly owned home between right. us as well. Yeah. Now, let's say that I've got a will and Dan's got a will. My will may say that my value on my death is going to pass for the benefit of my children. Hmm. And, of course, Dan's may say the same. But the problem is anything which is jointly owned passes to the survivor of us. So right. last man, last woman standing, as the case might be.
Yeah.
I put myself yeah. as the woman in that case, yeah? So, for example...
We've heard the rumours.
Thank you.
You're known as Brenda at the weekend, I believe.
Yeah, as opposed to Brendan.
Yeah. Told him not to wear that skirt today.
So, for example, if I'm in the mindset that my will take effect on my death, it does, but it only takes effect of what I own in my sole name.
Right.
Any joint property will pass to the survivor of the joint owners on death. So, of course, if I go first, yes, my children may get my ISAs or any shares I own in my own name if I've left it to them. Mm. However, joint property, the house and the joint bank accounts will pass to Dan and, of course, vice versa. Now, of course, in our made-up relationship, that may not matter.
Right.
However, you know, why does that mean anything? Well, look, if you were from a blended family, for example, and remember what the term blended come from is where perhaps someone has been married, they got divorced, but they've got their own children, and they've met someone of a similar ilk, or they met someone who doesn't have children.
Yeah.
And basically, they might buy a property jointly and hold their bank accounts jointly, but if in their mind they're thinking, well, look, when I die, my value will be held for the benefit of my children, that's not going to work because, of course, the joint ownership will pass to the survivor. And at that point in time, the survivor can change their will whatever way they see fit for themselves because a will can be changed until the day you die. So there are other areas we're going to cover as well. So I'm going to pass that over to Dan now.
Just before you do, is there an advantage, or what are the advantages or disadvantages, perhaps I should put it that way, of having a joint ownership of, say, a house? Is it better to have joint ownership, or is it better to have the ownership separate?
Okay. It all depends on circumstances. You may remember that we've said before...
Is there a tax advantage?
What, joint property?
Hmm.
Not necessarily. I mean... No, I would suggest not. I mean, look, if you've got a married couple,
yeah,
and one of the first of the married couple die, there's no inheritance tax charge on first death.
Right.
Okay, so it doesn't affect inheritance tax. Yeah, if it was a buy-to-let property. And it was solely owned, then it would be better for it to be solely owned in the person's name who's just died, because then it is reevaluated at today's rate of the date of death for capital gains tax. So it's reevaluated up to today, and that property can then be sold without the gain. So that's quite a clever way of owning property in your own name. Of course, how would you know who's going to die first? That's always our issue. Yeah. Dan, you see any benefits to any tax disadvantages from owning property jointly?
Not tax, no, but the question that Scott asked was, are there any benefits to owning a property jointly? And I guess the one that most readily springs to mind is the fact that it doesn't need to go through the probate process.
Yeah, it's quick.
Because, as Nick explained, it passes under the survivorship rules directly to the other joint owner.
Right.
It bypasses probate. And so that, I would suggest, is probably one of the benefits of joint ownership. Mm.
If not the benefit, yeah. I mean, there's some other disadvantages of owning jointly, of course, I guess you could say. So I'll run through them.
Yeah.
Do you remember before we mentioned about one of the... I guess tools that we use when we're talking to people is a crystal ball.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have an image of a crystal ball, and on the crystal ball, it's got stroke, dementia, Alzheimer's, remarriage after death, inheritance tax, and our tagline that we use is at Affinity Legal Group, we can't predict your future, but we can help you plan for it. Now right. that hopefully says the lot, because that's the truth of the matter. Joint property. Well, okay, let's go back. Let's say that you've got a couple, husband and wife. Perhaps they've got a blended family. The survivor inherits that, and receives the whole house because it was jointly owned, and maybe all the money. And then the survivor meets a new person.
Yeah.
Are we going to say they're going to meet a new person? No. Could they meet a new person? Yes. That's their decision, isn't it? Yeah, it's not ours.
Well,
and of course,
right.
if they make that decision, and then other ones that follow, if they marry and then they hold their accounts joint and they hold the property joint, then depending on who dies first, the survivor will hold all of that value. Now, is the survivor going to give it to the original owner's children or pass it as they might have imagined? The answer is we don't know again. So all we're saying is, look, to put some sort of firmness behind what you wish to do and how you want your value to be treated, you perhaps might want to own your property in a different way than joint ownership. That's the same for if someone was to die and the survivor entered into care. Of course, at that point in time, the assets are unprotected and they can all be gotten at, as opposed to perhaps a certain share of it. Then benefits of the...
So that's when you'd be better off having joint ownership, because it can't...
No, that would be different. You wouldn't want joint ownership in that respect.
If one of them went into joint care, I thought the whole of the property then went to the other one, no?
Okay, well, no, sorry. So I'm talking about death.
Right,
so
okay.
If you've got two owners, yeah. First person dies,
yeah.
And I was saying if the survivor of those two went into care and they owned the lot because they now own all the house and all the savings, that would probably be the worst position for that person or the family to be in. It may have been easier for the first owner to have transferred their value into some sort of trust for the benefit of the surviving partner and for the benefit of the other beneficiaries after, so that their share can't be gotten at.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, and there's a couple of ways of doing that. Did you want to add to that, Dan?
I'd like to go back to the original question.
That's all right.
which was what can't you give by your will? Nick gave the example of jointly owned assets. The other things that you can't leave are things that you don't own at the time of your death. And a couple of examples of that might be a pension pot.
Right.
If you've got some of money in a pension, whether it be a private pension or another type of pension, that's already sitting in a trust outside of your estate, and therefore it cannot be directed under the terms of your will. Another thing might be a life policy that's written into trust. That, of course, can't be controlled or directed by your will either. If you're part of an occupational pension scheme, such as the NHS or the Royal Mail or British Telecom, someone like that, that would pay a lump sum benefit to your nominated family members, and again outside of the terms of your will. So those are things that you can't give.
It is another as well, isn't it? If you was the beneficiary of a trust which was still in existence and then you died, then the terms of the trust are in play rather than it going via your will. In general.
Yes. And some people give things away before they die. So if you don't own it at the time of your demise, then clearly the gift in the will fail.
But isn't it not a situation that you have to give something away sometime before you die? Otherwise it's looked at that you've pulled a fast one.
Well, that's a very common common piece of knowledge. People think that they have to give something away and survive that gift by 7 years prior to death to avoid tax. And whilst that is a fact, it's only relevant if the estate at the time you made the gift exceeds the tax threshold.
Right.
So to use an example, if you've got a total overall estate as a single person of £300,000 and you make a gift to somebody of £10,000, there's no need to survive 7 years because you're not in a tax position anyway, so it's irrelevant.
All right, okay. Now, just before the break, you were explaining what happens to jointly owned property when the first person dies, and surely that simplifies things a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does, yeah.
Well, yeah, jointly owned property is simple, but again, it offers no protection to the survivors in the event of something unusual or bad happening, like, for example, remarriage after death or issues with debt, divorce of a beneficiary, credit issues of a beneficiary, the premature passing of a son or daughter where they're married, and of course, the care issue as well. So, although it may be simple, doesn't mean it's going to be effective in protecting the value of people's estates. And I think that is the question that people are after. That's what people are worried about. They don't want someone else getting involved, whether it be social services or a new partner. The problem is they're just not aware that that is the way things work, I'm afraid.
So what can they do about it?
Okay, well, looks like that one's on me.
Dan's getting his own back.
I think the first thing to do is to speak to a professional, and that's the whole point of us having these talks.
Yeah,
is that look, if someone talks to a professional like us, then we will give them certain options and tailor it to their needs, because it's very easy, you know, talking in general terms. I think maybe sometimes that goes past my people. I think what people need to do is sit down, have a conversation about what their situation is, and we look at their situation in great detail and give them choices that they can make. But I mean, in simple terms, they can change the way they own their property. So someone who owns the property jointly can change to tenants in common. Now, with the use of tenants in common and some trusts in a will or in their will, then they can protect the value for the benefit of each other and in the benefit of their chosen beneficiaries or children after they've gone. So, in other words, that portion of the estate that they leave, if they go first, can't be changed after they've gone. But it still can be used by the survivor. There's other ways of doing it. I mean, they can set up trusts while they're alive.
Right.
But again, these are complex matters which are not something to be discussed short on the radio. Dan, perhaps you'd like to add to that?
I was going to say, you haven't mentioned tenants in common before, I'm fairly sure. I don't recall it anyway.
We might not use that terminology, but it's basically owning a property in specific shares. 50% each is the most common way. Just to add to what Nick has said, and probably to round up, and Nick is quite right to say that people should be sitting down with a professional. And when we sit down with somebody to give advice, I think it's important to note that we don't make any charge for giving the advice. We will only incur fees if someone actually asks us to
set it up.
Act on and set up on based on the recommendations. So I think it's very important for people to understand that they can get this advice, and it's not going to cost them an arm and a leg to take the advice.
Well, I think that's jolly good advice. And as we said earlier on, there are so many variables. So if you want particular advice, these are the guys at Affinity, and they could be delighted to give you a free consultation. As I said, it's totally free of charge. It's in your own home, where you'll be able to talk through your particular circumstances and establish what it is that you need, and they'll come up with a tailor-made package for you. And the number to call is 01245 850 000. That number again, that Chelmsford number, 01245 850 000. Now, you guys are not going to be back here until about the 15th of June because of holidays and bank holidays and everything else. Any ideas what you're going to be talking about then?
Yeah, we discussed this briefly off air, and we'd like to give the listeners some practical scenarios and the solutions that we have recommended. Given some real life scenarios, just to make it all real.
Seems fair enough to me, but thank you very much indeed. Thanks again for coming in, and thanks very much indeed to Nick for changing all the
and Scott, you're notes. Welcome. I hope you enjoy your holiday.
Thank you.
Which
I
is
will.
Part of the reason why we're so delayed.
Absolutely. Put the blame on me. That's right. Put the blame on me. That seems reasonable to me.